So let's get into Mark 5. As we read, even though Jesus had a clear sense of call to his own tribe, the Jewish people of his time, there were many indications and movements to widen the invitation of the good news of God to those outside of this tribe in the Gospels. And we read in chapter 5 in this book of Mark, as a long and close look, that this is happening. These stories are very rich in chapter 5. There are actually only two stories with one embedded in the middle of story 2. And usually, as you know, we have about 100 stories in each chapter in the book of Mark. But we're finding with this author that he really likes to pack it in. So chapter 5 is a bit unusual. It's as if we're slowing down by looking at fewer stories that are recorded in more detail than usual. And I kind of had a hard time trying to find the close look verses. These stories are just so rich. I wanted to choose everything. But I did choose the close look verses, verse 27 to 29 and verse 34. So I want to read that now. Verse 27. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Immediately her bleeding stopped and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. And in verse 34, Jesus said to her, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. Freed from suffering. This chapter that is noted two times here in this chapter, it's a huge demonstration of Jesus' power that he offers, not to destroy, not to dominate, not to exploit or to gain for himself, but he uses his power to free human beings from their suffering. This is the person of Jesus that we're meeting in the book of Mark. Jesus embodies this compassion and this power to free suffering. These close look verses point to the long kind of overview of these stories in chapter 5 of Jesus challenging power. The overview of chapter 5 is Jesus challenging power over evil, power over seemingly impossible diseases, and then even power over death. There are several areas of suffering that Jesus is offering freedom here, in mental and spiritual suffering, bodily and social suffering, and even he's challenging the suffering of loss and death, especially of a young person. Let's also note that in this long overview of chapter 5, that Jesus was attentive to a collection of very vulnerable people. A non-Jewish outcast, a woman outcast, and a child who has no status in the society. In this overview, we see that Jesus goes against social and religious norms in all three of these stories for the sake of freeing suffering of vulnerable human beings. Now, you may think this is not new news. Jesus is compassionate. We know this. And chapter 5 invites us to really slow down and remind us of this, and to furthermore let this sink in deeper to affect our lives and the way we live as Christ followers. For empathy has not always been a value in societies. In Western culture today, empathy and compassion are even being challenged by the very people who claim to follow Jesus. On the extreme end, which seems to have great influence among young men in North America, is this idea of toxic empathy. Toxic empathy, people are talking about, is taking us away from what the biblical law says. Chapter 5 is discounting all of that. When we dig deeper into these stories, understanding the context and the way of storytelling here, we realize the depth, the height, the weight of Jesus' compassion and ability to use his power to free those who have been shackled from unempathetic societies, systems, and religious leaders. These stories are incredibly relevant for us today. Now, this first story of suffering is perfectly timed to our past Halloween or All Saints Day weekend. Honestly, it reads like a horrific horror movie. Jesus is trying to go on retreat. He's trying to get away from the crowds. He gets on a boat with the disciples and crosses into a land that is not considered Jewish territory. The clues we are supposed to notice that this is not a Jewish area is that Jesus is greeted from a man who lives on the grave site, and we are met by a herd, and we also meet a herd of pigs. So tombs and pigs were two very unclean considerations for the Jewish people. And so for Jesus and his disciples to be in the middle of engaging with tombs and with pigs is very outside Jewish practices and norms. So in this horror scene, we notice Jesus breaking Jewish purity codes. He engages with this tomb dweller, and he engages with the pig herders. And we notice why Jesus does this, because of suffering. This man who came to greet him on the other side did not live in a secure, warm home, but instead he lived in a gravesite. He was known to always be howling and bruising himself, self-harm, with stones. Imagine, to encounter this person would be horrific and scary. Not any one of us would be comfortable encountering this man if we were visiting our loved one in a gravesite. Obviously, people had been so frightened of him. Time and time again, he was shackled and chained. And even so, every time this happened, we read he wrenched apart his chains and the shackles broke in pieces. Even more horrifically frightening, imagine the strength and madness of this man. There's no way any of us could manage being in the same space. And also imagine the suffering this man was experiencing. We don't fully understand, I would say, we don't talk a lot about demon possession in our North American context. Is it severe mental illness, or is it a spiritual reality, or is it both? All we know is that this man was acutely aware of the spiritual power that Jesus carried. When Jesus came ashore, he ran to Jesus and started shouting at him out of fear, or rather, our author writes, it was the unclean spirit within him that begged Jesus not to torture him. And Jesus responded by asking his name. "My name is Legion," he says, "for we are many." And we read how Jesus frees this man from his great many suffering. Now, commentators also note that this story is written with a lot of military language. That word legion is a military term used by Roman military officers. They had legions of soldiers. And there are other military terms used in the story that get lost in translation to us. The military allusions suggest that this story is also symbolic. It's symbolic of Jesus freeing the Jewish people from the suffering of the Roman oppressors, a freedom as well from violent and systemic suffering. Whatever the suffering is here, spiritual, mental, systemic, or all three, which makes most sense to me, is that we see it is great, wide, and deep suffering that Jesus brings liberation to. 2,000 pigs rush down a steep cliff and drown in the sea. Again, another horrific horror movie type image. Picture it, 2,000 pigs rushing over a cliff and washing up dead on the shore. This depicts great, wide, and deep suffering that Jesus is confronting. challenging and bringing freedom to. It is such an impressive, amazing story. The next story reveals even more the practice Jesus had of freeing the most vulnerable. The next story has a story embedded in the center of it, which we know with the traditional Middle Eastern way of telling a story, it's the center of the story that is the most important, not the end of the story, but the gem and the takeaway is found in the center. And what we find in the center of this next story is a bleeding woman. A bleeding woman who bravely believes Jesus can truly heal her of her long, terrible years of being shackled and chained to poverty because of a medical support system that could not help her and a religious and social system that would not help her. In the center of the story, we get close up into her thoughts. She says, "If only I could touch Jesus," she thought. "I will be freed from my suffering. I will be freed." We can see that this story contains contrasts and parallels. There's a reason the story is within a story. They go together to prove a point. It starts with a privileged man, the synagogue ruler. He is a man. He is the head of the household. He is a person high up in religious position. He is a person with much power. He is named here Jairus. He's well known and respected among the community. And we see this person speak to Jesus. He is a person who has a voice and he advocates for his 12-year-old child. In contrast, on the way to his house, there is a woman who is living in extreme poverty. She spent all she had on doctors for how many years? 12 years. That's a very long time. She has no money. She has no religious power. She's considered unclean because of her perpetual bleeding. She is not named, unlike Jairus. She does not speak, in contrast to the synagogue ruler. She wants to remain anonymous. She does not have the confidence, the power, the status, the community to support, to say anything to Jesus herself. This woman holds opposite status and honor to the synagogue ruler by her vulnerability factors. Let's not miss the juxtaposition the author is clearly laying out for us so loudly. Because at the center of this story is the beauty, the wonder, the incredulity of Jesus stopping in the middle of the crowd saying, "Who touched me?" Oh, it's a wonderful, crazy, crazy request. Jesus is on his way to attend to a very urgent, pressing matter. The synagogue ruler's daughter is in danger of death. And all the crowds and disciples are pressing in on Jesus in a hurried, frenzied, Mark-like pace. But Jesus stops. Jesus stops. Jesus stops to elevate and to center someone who is in need. Jesus not only stops and waits for this woman to reveal herself, but it says he searches for her. He looks around until she speaks. And then when he addresses her, he calls her my daughter. My daughter. With Jesus stopping this whole entourage of people about to go to the synagogue ruler's daughter, with that important priority in focus, Jesus calls this woman my daughter and restores the dignity of this impoverished woman, seeking out relationship with her, elevating her to familial status. Jesus stops and sees her need as important, transcending social and religious barriers, stops to address her need, the need of someone vulnerable and marginalized before the needs of someone more powerful. Well, maybe we don't need to emphasize before the needs of the powerful, but as well as the needs of the powerful. Because Jesus doesn't stop and say that his work is done for the day. Jesus also had compassion on this synagogue ruler's child who had, in these moments of delay, died. But Jesus isn't fazed by this and does something so extraordinary that this little daughter of 12 years old is also freed from death. And the synagogue ruler's family is freed as well from great, wide, and deep suffering of having a child that dies far too early. Now, to ask something of God is very risky. We don't know if God will answer our requests in the way that we like. All the people in these stories came to Jesus and dared to ask Jesus something in their own way, either yelling at Jesus or begging Jesus or asking anonymously. But to all these ways of asking, Jesus responds. In all three stories, we see Jesus responding with the power to free them from suffering. We do see in this story people who are not willing to risk asking. We see the servants of Jairus telling him, "Don't bother Jesus after the daughter has died." We see the household of Jairus laughing at Jesus, who said the daughter was just asleep. Yet the risk of reaching out and believing in Jesus' power offered more goodness than each person was expecting would happen when they asked. This reaching out to ask something of God is the beginning of relationship. As Richard Rohr writes, God is looking for all the places within us that are saying yes. Even if it's the very anonymous, hidden request. Now, of course, when we read stories like this, we immediately bring to mind the lives that we know of people who are suffering still around us. Those trapped in shackles with impossible diseases, young people dying. We see Jesus is not healing the whole world in these three stories. But we do see an invitation to open up to a God who is like this, an invitation to dare to ask, an invitation to open up to a God reaching for relationship. An invitation to receive a God concerned with deep, wide, and great suffering in our world, who has enough bandwidth for the most vulnerable and the most privileged, for those who are inside the tribe and outside of the tribe. We are invited to follow this Jesus with our needs and the needs of others, to ask something of God. To ask something of a God like this is to move into deeper relationship with God. So I hope you see the invitation to pray in these stories. The invitation to dare to ask and believe. This week can be a week to try to practice prayer. Again, to pray our one-line prayer when you wake up in the morning or at noonday or in the evening or at bedtime, whatever you choose to pray. The suggested prayer today, you could put the slide up, Krista, is Jesus, with your power, free us from our great, deep, and wide suffering. There may be a specific prayer you attach with this. This may be a prayer you pray every day for someone else or for yourself or a certain situation. This is an invitation. There may be another prayer that came to you today. That's good too. This prayer, all prayer, is an invitation to deeper relationship with God. So I invite you to take this prayer with you into this week, and I invite us to pray together now. Our God of deep compassion and love, we offer to you all of our suffering and pain. Give us strength to bear our weakness. Give us healing even when there is no cure. We pray for peace in the midst of turmoil and love to fill the spaces of our lives. Give us courage to dare to ask, to dare to reach out to you. Jesus Christ, with your power, free us from our great, wide, and deep suffering. Amen.